Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
And welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. The Gatesworth sponsors this segment. Go to their website. Find out more information about them. But let me just say this. The food is outstanding. The activities are endless. The answer is always yes when you call down to the front desk. The Gatesworth, 170 and Del Mar, One McKnight Place. You will absolutely love it. Each week, brought to you by Lakeside Roofing, we have the Hall of Famer Rick Hummel with us. Rick, good to be with you. How are you, sir?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Good. You didn't make the trip to Cooperstown this year, did you?
No, I did not. I wish I could have gone. We just missed one of my favorites, but once they decided he was going to wear a Cubs hat, that took a little bit of the interest level out of our going up there, I think.
How often is that like La Russa went with the blank hat? It's all the athletes call or all the managers call, correct?
Not necessarily. The Hall of Fame can suggest, like Smith had 7 years with the Cubs and 4 with the Cardinals. That wasn't really very close, even though he had his better years here. And I don't think he fought that very much. He probably could have said, hey, look, I want to wear a blank hat, which might have made some sense because he played with 6 other clubs, too, besides those two, but not as long with any of them. But the Hall suggests strongly, and La Russa had 3 clubs, even with the White Sox, Oakland, and the Cardinals, and he wasn't going to budge off that. And he probably did the right thing by doing what he did.
Although it wasn't a popular stance in St. Louis.
No, but it probably wouldn't have been popular in Oakland either if he'd gone in with the Cardinals. Because he won one World Series out there, too.
Whitey went in as a Cardinal, correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
Suter?
And Suter went in as a Cardinal.
And you could, yeah, go ahead.
He had his best years with the Cardinals, and he hadn't played with the Cubs many more years. It wasn't like 7-4 with Smith, I don't think. It was pretty close.
You know, this 2004 team, you were at the luncheon there on Saturday with us, and they were honored. And the reason they're so good is that, okay, you have one surefire Hall of Famer in Albert and Yachty, who was on the team. But the thing that made it really special is you have so many guys on that squad that at least receive some Hall of Fame consideration. I mean, Larry Walker, Jim Edmonds, Scott Rowland, Edgar Renteria, Chris Carpenter, even Reggie Sanders is a 300-300 guy. There's so many guys on that team with this incredible baseball resumes.
Yeah, Reggie Sanders, you mentioned, and him and Larry Walker were really good ball players. Walker's still got a chance to get in the Hall of Fame, I think. He's getting closer. If people can put that, what he hit in Denver to rest, he's a pretty good player on the road, too. And, you know, everybody plays home games somewhere. You have to hit them that play after games on the road anyway. So I that's a great outfield that they had with Edmonds and those two guys. And Renteria is probably one of the best players that doesn't get much recognition at all. He didn't crave it, and nor did he receive as much as he should have had.
What's a guy like that do now? Boy, he just dropped off the face of the earth as soon as he retired.
I'm told he's involved in Columbia youth baseball. He's from Columbia, the country of Columbia, mind you. So I think that's what he's doing, which is a pretty big operation probably down there. He almost upset the Dominican Republic in the most recent World Baseball Classic in 2017. Like a play at the plate at the end of the game, and they had some pretty good players. They had Teron, they had a couple other pitchers, and they have some players now too, where they're going to be a factor in the next one. Edgar has a lot to do with that now.
He his body of work after Ozzie's, I think, is the second best post World War II for the Cardinals with that shortstop position. And I've brought this up before. I'm just wondering if 10 years from now, if we're debating Paul DeJong and Edgar Renteria, keeping in mind that, you know, DeJong has more home runs by the end of July this year than Renteria ever hit in his big league career. But Renteria, 5-time All-Star, 2,200 hits.
Yeah, I don't. That Paul doesn't project as a guy who's going to have 2,200 hits necessarily. He's going to have a lot of home runs, and he's become an excellent fielder. Where he needs to pick up his game, he's hitting like 185 with men in scoring position this year, and that's not really acceptable for a middle of the lineup guy.
All right, let's get to the topic du jour, 3 o'clock trade deadline. What do you think? What has the best chance of happening here? Is there any name out there you think, you know what, they could bring him here by 3 o'clock today?
Well, I guess the topic du jour is of players is Robbie Ray, the left-hander from Arizona, who's pitched really well against the Cardinals as recently as a couple, 3 weeks ago. After the first game after the All-Star break, he pitched a two-hit ball for 6 1/3 innings. He has walked a lot of guys before. He didn't walk but two that night. But there are other teams that are in on this. I mean, if the Yankees want to include Clint Frazier as quite a talented player, I don't know if the Cardinals have the players to match up with Arizona, even though they did do a deal with Arizona most recently. So that gives you hope that they can do something else. You know, they got Goldschmidt for Weaver and Carson Kelly. I don't know. You hear Minor from Texas, Dylan Bundy from Baltimore. I don't think Mike Leake would choose to put the Cardinals, he has a no-trade clause, complete no-trade clause. I don't think he would lift it to rejoin them in a deal from Seattle.
That would be awkward.
And even though the Cardinals are paying him $4 million this year, it's hard to tell. There may be another name, or Syndergaard is unlikely to come. The Mets think they got a chance to win the wild card this year. Maybe they do. You have a rotation of DeGrom, Syndergaard,
Stroman,
and Steven Matz. That's pretty good. So their bullpen stinks, but that, you know, the rotation's fine.
Back to Robbie Ray. Now that Marcell Ozuna is taking at-bats in Memphis, could you move Tyler O'Neill in that deal and be okay? I'm sure it would take a little bit more than Tyler O'Neill. What do you think it would take to get Robbie Ray?
It would take a young pitcher and probably a position player because Robbie Ray is under control for next year. They have to decide two things. One, do they think they have any chance of re-signing Ozuna? And two, do they think O'Neill can be a regular player if they don't re-sign Ozuna? And both of those we don't know. O'Neill has been pretty good lately.
He has.
And, you know, but you have to give something to get something. So that would be a name that could be discussed, I guess. You still have, for next year, signed players in Fowler and Martinez, whether they're both here or not, you don't know that. You have Bader as a player here for next year, probably. You try to move him, but I'm not sure they want to pick up a guy who's hitting 195 right now, even though he might be a good player for them. But that would be the guy I would more likely put in a conversation with them than O'Neill.
I mean, you're probably not going to retain Ozuna, but you have Dylan Carlson, we think, who could be ready to play next year in left field. So here's the deal. Would you trade the Diamondbacks? Would this be enough? Would, like, Hensley and Tyler O'Neill be enough for Robbie Ray? Probably not.
It might be. It depends what they think of both those guys. And we have different opinions maybe on some of these guys and other teams do. Hensley has been good in the brief chances he's had. About a couple home runs, but he's also thrown hard and been pretty effective. And he could be either reliever or starter for them. O'Neill could be maybe a regular player for them, as he could be a regular player here. But that sounds like a pretty reasonable conversation. You might want to get even something back if you could, another position player of some sort. But that would seem to be a reasonable conversation.
Milwaukee seems to be really aggressive at the deadline, or they have been recently. Anything you're hearing with the Brewers?
Well, I think they've just traded
Aguilar,
first baseman Aguilar, to Tampa Bay. So that means that, you know, Thames is their first baseman. They're actually fine with that. Aguilar had mostly a bad year and was not playing regularly for them. So and Tampa Bay gets another hitter. But the Brewers have to get pitching. That doesn't help their pitching at all, that trade they made there, I don't think, unless they get somebody we're not quite aware of. They need one starting pitcher anyway. and maybe another one. Jimmy Nelson's on rehab again, and he's their best guy probably, but his shoulder hasn't responded since he dived into first base the end of the 2017 season. And I don't know if he's going to do them any good or not, but they got to have somebody else.
Do you think the Cardinals have kicked the tires at all or had a conversation about Zach Greinke, or is that money too insane?
Well, I'm sure they've always asked about him. And the money is one thing, but do you think he can pitch as well at age 36 and 37 in the last 2 years of that contract? That's a big ask. He's 35 now. He's been very good. But 36 and 37 usually are years that starting pitchers are not as good as they have been previously in their career. If you look at Wainwright, for instance, 30, he's been pretty good this year. He's almost 38 now. But there's no guarantees when he goes out there from game to game what you're going to get. He's been good more often than not, but he's been bad a couple times lately too.
Don't you think, though, if you're the Cardinals and you haven't been to the playoffs for three consecutive years and you're in a weak division, you got a chance to really win this thing, that you got to go for it? I mean, if it's about money, I know it's a big contract, but, boy, if you have a chance to add a number one starter and maybe not have to give up that much because, you know, the deal is about picking up that contract, you got to do it.
Well, if you think he's going to be that good 2 years from now, I agree the money doesn't bother them that much. They take on the money. But this isn't a guy who's 31 or 32. He's going to be 36 when he shows up here next year, and if he shows up here next year. So you look at it. You got to ask about it. But there are things to consider. That sometimes baseball trades are made for what guys have done in the past rather than what they will do in the future. And that's, you have to look at the future. I mean, what they've done in the past is almost meaningless. You have to think, what are they going to do for me?
The commissioner, the Hall of Famer Rick Hummel, joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. We talked about this earlier in the program, but if Adam Wainwright, you know, finishes the season with, you know, 11 victories and a sub-4.5 ERA, they'll try to do the same thing, right? Get incentive-based contract, $2 million bucks.
I would think he had interest, would have interest in that. Depends how many innings he can pitch. If he can get to 160 innings, which he might be able to do, 160, 175 maybe. And I thought before the season started, if he won 11 or 12, there wouldn't be any reason for him to stop pitching. I mean, he's better than if, like the other day, he said his stats look like those of an average pitcher. That's before last night's game. Well, that means that half the league is not as good as he is. So why should he quit?
And he, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with his arm. And if you have an incentive-based contract, which it was his idea to suggest that last year in the first place, that he convinced his agent to do it first, and then his agent convinced the club to do it. I don't see a reason why they wouldn't do that, because they're more likely to lose Michael Walker to free agency if they don't deal him, you know, today sometime.
Is there any trade value for Michael Walker?
There might be. He's not hurt either, I don't think. And he's been a big-time pitcher late in the season. He wouldn't probably bring very much. And you might actually, you know, and you can't make him a qualifying offer, though, at the end of the season. That would be maybe $17 million. That's a lot more than he's making now. And if that would ever get made, he would accept that in a heartbeat. But I think he's here for right now. He can still help them. He probably doesn't have a whole lot of value, but if you're trying to make room for somebody you would be acquiring, maybe he might have to go.
Give us your take on what you're seeing out of Giovanni Gallegos and how shocking this guy has been.
We only got to see him for a couple games last year, and he was pretty good when they brought him up from Memphis right at the end of the season. He got in the last game of the season, I think maybe one more that weekend. And I'm very surprised because he was not very good in spring training. Didn't get a very long look, but he allowed a lot of home runs right away. And he was one of the first guys sent out. And even Schilt has said maybe we should have looked at him a little bit longer, because when he came up from Memphis, he was mopping up and this and that, and he almost they took him, they kept him as long as going to Mexico, only because he was from Mexico. They wanted him to, you know, show him off down there. And then he started pitching really well, and they thought, well, gee, we can't send him back. They were going to. but they didn't. I think he can be a closer. I think next year, if Martinez follows through on his request to start again, and if he can do it, I think Gallegos will be a fine closer, at least until you get Hicks back, which is probably June, July, sometimes like that. But even he might be a closer for the whole season. He's got the stuff to do it.
Do you ever get any new intel on Alex Reyes?
Well, the new intel, I guess, is that he's progressing throwing program, but I dare say we will not see him throw a pitch for the Cardinals before September 1st. And maybe they'll bring him up after that. You know, he's not on injury rehab. He's on an option down there. So it isn't like this rehab runs out or anything. It can go the rest of the year, in theory. Because he was on the opening day roster and pitched himself off it. And even before he got hurt down there, he wasn't pitching very well. So he's going to have to not only prove he's healthy, but pitch as if he belongs in the big leagues. And neither has happened so far. So it's not going to happen this month.
So he'll be, along with quite a few others, in the mix next year to try to win a spot in the rotation?
I think if he doesn't show them anything this year, I think they'll give up on him. I think they might even DFA him. I don't see any reason to hang on to him if he doesn't show them anything before the end of the season here. That's 3 years. You've gotten virtually nothing out of him. I'd say clear the decks.
You would part ways with Alex Reyes?
Sure. If he gives them nothing this year, if he isn't healthy, or show him anything that leads him to believe he can be anything like the pitcher that they thought he was. You can't tie up a roster spot with him again.
Wow. That's provocative. The Brewers did receive Jacob Faria, 2.70 ERA in 10 relief innings this year from Tampa in that move.
Yeah, I see that. I kind of like him a little bit, and the Brewers can use some bullpen help, too, ahead of Hader. So that's something for them. They didn't plan to use Aguiar very much, and there's been some talk they might want to move Moustakas and Grandal, too, before the day's over. Although that would be hard to do to take two regulars out. Aguiar was not a regular.
How many times do you think you interviewed David Bell while he was with the Cardinals, and how surprising is his behavior?
Well, I never thought he'd be – what's he been kicked out of, like 9 games now?
Yeah.
Already? I didn't – I'm not saying I didn't think he might be a managerial candidate someday. He's a smart guy, and he comes from a great, you know, family background of baseball players, and Buddy Bell, his dad managed for a long time. But I didn't see this other side, this what do you call it, hostile, but certainly combative side of him, where he takes on umpires, other managers, you know, anybody. He's no longer mild-mannered David Bell.
How about what Cleveland got in return for Trevor Bauer? That was quite a package.
Well, the two guys they got, Reyes and Puig, have 49 home runs between them, 27 for Reyes and 22 for Puig. And they'll have Reyes for a bunch of years. They'll lose Puig. You know, Puig's free agent after the season. They won't have him back, but they'll have Reyes. And they didn't want to pay Bauer $20 million next year anyway, which he's going to get in his last year of arbitration, 18 to 20. So they did a terrific job there. Now, Puig does bring some baggage with him, as even displayed last night. After he's been traded, not officially, because they would have taken him out of the game and been official, but he might actually show up for this new team with a suspension hanging over his head before he could play for them.
What's the best baseball brawl you've seen in person? It looked like a pretty good punch by Garrett, but it was a wild one, but you've probably seen some better ones over the years.
Oh, the one that sticks in my mind was the Giants and the Cardinals, where even Whitey and Roger Craig were into it, you know, behind the backstop there. The genesis was that Vince Coleman had stolen third base when the Cardinals were way ahead in a game that ended up being pretty close. And the Giants took exception to that, and a couple pitchers took exception to that, and then all heck broke loose. And the game ended up being very close, and Whitey said afterwards, I'll promise to still stop stealing bases if you promise to stop hitting home runs, because the Giants hit a bunch of home runs after that. And Whitey got into it. Rick Horton was in it, Joel Youngblood was with the Giants, and Danny Cox was the next day's pitcher, and he was charting behind the screen because that's what Whitey had the pitchers do in street clothes. And when this brawl broke out, Coxie, being the man that you know, immediately went into the clubhouse, put his uniform on, and came out to try to get involved in it. Luckily, the umpire said, oh, no, that's enough. You're not coming out here. But he was ready to go.
What did Whitey say to Roger when they were squaring off? Did you hear?
I don't know. There probably wasn't much time for conversation there other than maybe, you know, we'll stop stealing bases if you stop hitting home runs. But Whitey got mixed up in it. He ended up getting thrown to the ground by Youngblood, and Ricky Horton got tangled up in there somehow, too, trying to save Whitey. And it was a great one.
Yeah.
And Vince, not a hand was one laid on him, really. I guess he kind of skated to the side. But he kind of caused it.
Youngblood was kind of a beast, too. He was really strong, wasn't he?
He was strong. He was a good guy, you know, good player for several teams. But you have a spot where he was trying to protect his guys. The Giants and Cardinals didn't like each other anyway.
You know, yeah. Jeffrey Leonard.
Jeffrey Leonard, Will Clark, you know, was a combative guy with the Giants. And Ozzie, they liked, and Brenly, you know, they didn't like each other either. That was a terrific rivalry, and it just was great that night.
Good stuff, Commish. We'll see you at the ballpark today. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Zach Greinke's pitching for the Arizona Diamondbacks right now, so he won't be traded until the game's over, at least.
Oh, that's right. And I don't know if you saw the before the game, Manager Hurdle and Manager Bell brought up their respective lineup cards, and they didn't shake hands.
They nodded each other. I saw. Yeah. I just watched them nod. They shook hands with the umpires, but that was
it. That's funny. All right, sir. We'll see you soon.
Yes, sir. Bye.
That's the great Rick Hummel joining us, brought to you by Lakeside Roofing, established in 72, solid rep for excellence in the roofing industry. Their philosophy is focused around a relentless commitment to customer service, quality products, and outstanding workmanship. Lakeside Roofing's rep is one of reliability, trust, high-quality work, and competitive pricing. They feature the finest quality roofing materials and provide expert installation. Call the professionals at Lakeside Roofing for your home or business. In Illinois, call 618-344-2800. In Missouri, call 314-241-5253. Find them online at lakesideroofing.com. And Dr. Michael Jones is also a great sponsor. He is regarded as one of the great eye surgeons in the country. The phone number is 866-260-EYES. And if you want to get rid of the glasses and get rid of the contacts forever, I recommend a trip to Quantum Vision Centers. He practices on both sides of the river, professor at SLU. He does all sorts of surgery, including LASIK and custom cataract. He'll get it done for you. 866-260-EYES. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.